Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning appointment with the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Kevin Most. Good morning, Doc. I want to ask you first about this new study. Long COVID, possibly longer and worse than we first thought. What do you know about this?
Yeah, Bob, you know, obviously the concern is that we don't know a lot about long COVID, right? We're still seeing the initial patients from it. Now, the bad thing is that we're still trying to figure out, is this due to damage that the virus did to the body, or is this more like a lower level contained infection that is continuing? So if that's the case and we continue to do damage, we look like we may have people who have long COVID that actually get worse instead of getting better. It's really coming down to what's the cause of long COVID, and we have to remember, long COVID is everything from heart issues all the way to brain issues. So a lot of scope of long COVID. So we're looking at it, and things aren't looking as promising as we had hoped that this would just go away and that the problem would go back to normal.
People with long COVID, will they actually test negative, or does it show positive for them on a COVID test?
Yeah, it's interesting because when we do the test, you know, we're doing the nasal swab, we're doing the test, you know, where the virus normally is, up in the upper respiratory tract. That's how we do it, right? Everyone has done a home test, knows where we're testing. The unfortunate thing is we're wondering, did the virus now get embedded in different parts of the body, which is very difficult to test, because then you're looking for antibodies, so you're doing it during a blood test. Well, we know these individuals have had infections in the past, so we know that their antibodies are going to be positive. And if it's at such a low level, we aren't looking for a change in antibody levels. So really trying to figure out a better way to test for it and really a better way to identify where it is, and is it caused by the inflammation and damage, or is it caused by continued infection?
Yeah, lots of questions still to be answered. Last week, we were talking about this study that was in the news about forever chemicals in freshwater fish. And we were very confused. I think our listeners were very confused. We're trying to figure out what fish to avoid and the fish that are healthy for us to eat. Give us the latest on this, Doc.
Yeah, well, this is very discouraging. I mean, because of the forever chemicals, people need to understand we started manufacturing these chemicals in 1930s, and the reason they're called forever is they don't break down. In other words, we have a lot of materials we can compost. It breaks down and goes back to normal. These do not break down. And the bad thing is they've gotten in the water system. And for years, we thought that they were okay, that they were safe, that they were all right, especially even at low levels. And what we found now is that they can cause thyroid disease, they can cause liver damage, they can cause high cholesterol. So now it's really gotten our attention. Well, is it a little too late is the problem. Because if you look at the study, and it's an interesting study, your listener should go to ewg.org, and it will show you where they harvested these fish that they had these high levels. And unfortunately, the Great Lakes is probably one of the higher points. So multiple sites along Lake Michigan, there's actually one site up in the Fox River. And the concern is that these fish are being caught nowhere near places where manufactured these chemicals, so that they are out there. Now, the concern of what can I eat? Well, certainly after looking at this, I'm not going to be eating a lot of freshwater fish that have been harvested from anywhere around the Great Lakes. You know, and that's just me being overcautious, but the levels that they have found in these fish are extremely high. Hmm. And they looked at over 500 fish for the entire country, and 500 different places. Now, certainly the ones that were the highest were the catfish, you know, the bottom eaters, you know, where these chemicals go, but they also found them in perch. They also found them in smelt. So it's very discouraging because these chemicals aren't going to go away, and it's going to be, you know, we've stopped using them for the most part, but still the concentrations in these fish, you eat one of these fish, it's the equivalent of having contaminated water for 30 days in a row. That'll get your attention.
No kidding. Until that study came out, my only question and my wife's only question would be about salmon and whether to get wild caught or farm raised. What do you think about that? What's the answer to that question? Has that changed?
Well, and I think, by the way, you asked the question was really good, because what you are going to find is you're going to find individuals with farm-raised salmon that are going to show you that the water that they used is going to be clean versus the wild caught. Now, salmon, certainly spend, a lot of time in different areas, some in the ocean, some in the rivers. But the salmon in Lake Michigan, I would say I'd be very concerned about.
Hmm. It's our Monday morning appointment with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. With the passing from prostate cancer of Lynn Bramer at the age of 68, a few questions. And, of course, we don't know the specifics here, but this was an aggressive form of the disease, wasn't it, Doctor?
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it, being diagnosed, I believe, in July and passing this quickly. So obviously thoughts and condolences go out to him, his wife, and his son. But I think, prostate cancer, for the most part, is one that we have found that we can live with, that we can treat. But unfortunately, men over the age of 75, it's the leading cause of cancer death in men. So certainly very good that we're making people more aware of this, because it's somewhat confusing.
At what age should men start getting tested?
Yeah, but that's the confusing part right there, right, Bob? Mm. So, we look at the PSA test. Really, we should start about the age of 55. Now, if you've had family members or any genetic predisposition to it, then certainly we're pushing that back down to the age of 40 to start testing. And the test is with the PSA blood test, which has been very controversial, because we're chasing a number that can be elevated not only by cancer, but can be elevated by other things, can be elevated by an infection in the prostate or just the prostate itself enlarging. So that's why the physicians and the academics are like saying, wait a second, is this really a good test? Because it has led to unnecessary biopsies, continuing monitoring. So we don't have the best test for it, but certainly individuals, your doctor is going to do a PSA test often. Below 4, you have a very low chance of cancer. 4 to 10, you have about a 25%. And then really, when we get over the number 10, we're certainly going to be concerned. But probably more importantly, we're going to look at trends. Is it going up? Is it continuing to increase in light of no infection going on? So certainly unfortunate, but certainly something that everyone needs to know about.
The test, the PSA, simple blood test, but I've heard doctors say that one that men certainly don't look forward to, the in-person examination, is still a pretty reliable one, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, too, because really the in-person, reliable is not as reliable, because it is, it's just not as good. So really, a lot of people have stopped even doing that portion of the exam and are relying on family history, trending in the blood test, and then actually doing more exacting tests, which may be an MRI test or an ultrasound test, just because the palpation of that prostate is not as accurate sometimes as some of the other tests that really should be done.
And is there still controversy over the way you treat prostate cancer and what you do and the timetable?
Yeah, so this is all changing. It's, we look at cancer treatments for all different cancers. They're being changed. Yeah. Previously, we looked at something called brachytherapy, where we would actually put small seeds of radiation right into the prostate and use that. So that's still being used, but only early on and, not so often. Now we're doing, and the surgery used to be so difficult that it had many problems, but now we're able to do robotic prostate surgery. So I would say any individual who's considering, who has prostate cancer and is going to be considering removal of the prostate gland, certainly look for, or at least talk to somebody who has done these robotically. The trauma to the surrounding tissue is not as bad. The rehabilitation is much quicker, and the outcomes are much better. And again, you want somebody who has done hundreds of these instead of someone who's just, you know, starting doing them now. But certainly other treatments with radiation, with ultrasound, with cryotherapy, there's many different trials that are going on in very many different ways because it is such a common cancer.
Important information, Eric. Thanks, as always, to Northwestern Medicine's Dr. Kevin Most. And based on what you said, Doc, next time I have my physical, when my doctor puts on the glove and gets ready to do that, I'm just going to tell him, no need. I'll pass on that one. We don't have to do that.
Or I would say, tell me what my PSA tests have been, and are they trending up? And is that the reason you're doing this, or have my PSA tests been stable, and do we really need this portion?
I'll remember that.
That's the follow-up question. That'll show him that you know what you're talking about.
I'll fool him. Talk to you next Monday morning. Have a good one. Thanks, Doc.
You got it, Bob. Thanks.